restraints. We will eliminate everything, referring to Palestinians as animals. Judge Donahue continued, Gallant went on to describe Hamas as comparable to the Islamic State. After proceedings concluded today, the South African government said it welcomed the ICJ's decision. We're continuing with our guests right now. Diana Bhutu, Palestinian human rights attorney in Haifa, Israel. Roz Siegel, Israeli historian and professor of Holocaust and Genocide Studies, Stockton University, joining us from Philadelphia. And Mahmoud Mamdani, professor of government at Columbia University, specializing in the study of colonialism. Diana Bhutu, if you can talk about what exactly the timetable is right now and the true level of enforcement that the ICJ or even the United Nations overall has. Go back to, using as a reference, your involvement with the 2004 decision where the ICJ ruled the separation wall that Israel built in the occupied territories illegal.
Well, let's first start with this particular case. I think it's important to keep in mind that just last week, Prime Minister Netanyahu said that nothing is going to stop him, not the ICJ, not The Hague, nobody is going to stop him, and that he's going to continue to pursue ahead. And of course, the reason he's doing this is in part because he is genocidal, and in large part because he knows that the minute that the attacks on Gaza are over, that his term in office is also over because of the internal dissent inside Israel. And the reason that this is important is because we haven't heard yet what Israel's going, what they've said, but judging by that, it means that they're going to ignore this ruling. And if they ignore this ruling, it then becomes imperative upon the member states to take this decision to the UN Security Council to have the ruling enforced at the Security Council level. And it becomes really a question of whether the United States is going to veto or abstain or what exactly it's going to do. I can tell you in terms of what happened in 2004, 2004 was a very different case. It was an advisory opinion. It wasn't a case in of the same type. And in 2004, Israel took the exact same position, that it wasn't going to stop the construction of the wall. In fact, it accelerated it. And but part of that decision indicated that there are other states, third states, other countries that are also obliged to make sure that Israel upholds international law. And that was the part that where the world failed. And out of that, this is where we saw the BDS, the Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions Movement, ended up being recreated, reconstituted on the one-year anniversary of the ICJ ruling, so in 2005. And the reason that it came together was because we expected that the world was going to come forward and do something to make sure that the advisory opinion was upheld and enforced, but instead they did nothing. So once again, we will likely see that Israel is going to ignore this ruling. It's then imperative to take it to the UN Security Council. But all the while, it's very important that we continue to boycott Israel, to divest from Israel, and to push for sanctions, that the global BDS movement should be growing at this point to make sure that the age of Israeli impunity finally comes to an end.
Roz Siegel, if you can talk about the aspects of genocide. You write, the crime of genocide has two elements, intention and execution. And what Joan Donahue, the head of the court, at least for another few weeks, read in terms of the decision for what constitutes genocide, and what this means, as an Israeli historian who lives in the United States, while Israel tried to say this doesn't matter, the fact is they participated in this, clearly showing it matters a great deal to them, and also what it means for the United States' support for Israel and what's happening today with this court finding.
Yeah, so I think that it was very important that the court quoted some of the statements of intent, and it's again important to emphasize that we're talking about dozens of statements of intent to destroy Palestinians, intent to destroy in the language of the UN Convention, and by people with what's called an international law command authority, so state leaders, war cabinet ministers, senior army officers. And these statements were made over time, so not just a week or two after the 7th of October Hamas-led attack, but over time, actually until today, when we think about what Prime Minister Netanyahu said on 13th of January, when he said that Israel's attack will continue whatever happens in The Hague, he also reiterated the portrayal of Palestinians as Nazis, for example, right, which is a basically a mechanism of dehumanization, a mechanism that portrays all Palestinians in Gaza as legitimate military targets. So these statements of intent, again, dozens of statements over time by people with command authority, filled with dehumanizing language, right, human animals, monsters, which historically we know are indicators of genocide. So I think it was very significant that the court mentioned and quoted some of these statements to emphasize that it's not, as Israel tried to argue, that it's not something that we can disregard, that it's actually a key element of the crime of genocide, and we should be paying attention to this. But then it also emphasized a number of times, actually, the really unprecedented scale of killing and destruction on the ground, the catastrophic situation that Palestinians are facing now. And in this context, I think it's very important to say that the court basically accepted South Africa's argument that Israel's quote-unquote evacuation orders are not actually, as Israel claimed, humanitarian measures, but they're actually genocidal in essence. That means that they are meant, which is what they did, to displace millions of people, almost 2 million Palestinians, well, virtually almost all the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip, and under intensive bombings. And we know that Israel also bombed Palestinians fleeing on routes that it designated as safe. It also bombed Palestinians in the southern part of the Strip early on, which it designated as safe. And of course, under the conditions of the total siege, where we today, indeed, this measure did what it was intended to do, right? It created famine, it created the spread of infectious disease, it created a population that has no access to clean water, has no fuel, has no medical supply. It destroyed all the universities in Gaza, it destroyed a majority of the hospitals, it destroyed agricultural land, it targeted cultural sites. So everything that we know historically that happens in genocide, and with this massive displacement that is now, we know that even if Israel's attack stops now, many, many Palestinians will continue to die of these conditions of life, again, if to quote the convention, that Israel deliberately created in order to bring about the physical destruction of the group in whole or in part. So I thought that it was very important that the ruling actually quoted and emphasized both the issues of intent and the dynamics of violence and the conditions that we see now on the ground. This is very, very significant. Again, the court is saying that there is plausibility that Israel is likely has committed and is committing acts of genocide in Gaza.
And what this means for the United States, Professor Siegel?
Yeah, well, I mean,
and that the deliverer of the message, of course, the head of the court, is an American.
Yeah, I think that you know, it's difficult. It's difficult to say, and I'm curious to see how the U.S. state will respond. I think that I'm very curious to see, as I said, in the next few hours, I mean, beginning at noon today, Eastern time, the case in California, right? Because now the judge there has the ICJ ruling. So the judge knows that the World Court has ruled that Israel is likely committing genocide. I think that there will be growing pressure also on the U.S. In this sense. It's difficult to say what the U.S. will do, but we do know actually that in Europe, there are more and more states, not Germany, but more and more states that have already said and will in various ways need to abide by the court ruling, which may be very significant in terms of obstructing arms deals, refusing to facilitate transfer of arms to Israel through Europe and various other measures. I think that, as I said before, any company, any university, any state around the world now, right, knows that Israel is likely committing genocide. So the isolation of Israel, and I hope that we'll also be seeing more and more calls for direct cutting of ties with Israel, academic boycotts in the U.S. So while the U.S. state will definitely try, you know, to ignore the ruling, and we already see the headline in the New York Times today, right now, by the way, if people are following, right, which frames this as the court did not issue an order for ceasefire, right, which in effect it actually did, because if it, you know, as Professor Mamdani said, if it ordered, right, that Israel should cease from genocidal acts, if it ordered that Israel should facilitate the entry of humanitarian aid, it actually said you have to cease fire, because otherwise there's no ways of doing that, right? So I think that the U.S., if to judge by the New York Times right now, will try to ignore this as much as possible, but I think that the pressure is going to be, we're just at the beginning of the pressure building up on this issue. So I think we might see some significant moves on this front as well.
The court case you're referring to in Oakland today, which will be fueled by the International Court of Justice response from The Hague, the Center for Constitutional Rights brought the lawsuit against President Biden, accusing him of failing to follow his obligations under international and U.S. law to prevent the genocide in Gaza. The complaint brought on behalf of Palestinians, including residents of Gaza, who are asking a federal court to, let's see if I can read this, a federal court to intervene, to block Biden, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, and Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin from providing further military funding, arms, and diplomatic support to Israel. Catherine Gallagher, a senior attorney for the Center of Constitutional Rights and one of the lawyers who brought the case, said in a statement, the United States has a clear and binding obligation to prevent not further genocide. So far, they've failed in both their legal, moral duty and considerable power to end this horror. They must do so. Now, that's the court case that's happening in a few hours in Oakland. I also wanted to read the response of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. I'm reading from an article in Haaretz, the Israeli newspaper. He said the decision by the ICJ, quote, rightly rejected the outrageous demand to deny Israel the right to basic self-defense to which it's entitled as a country. According to him, quote, the very claim that Israel's committing genocide against Palestinians is not just false, it's outrageous, and the court's willingness to discuss it at all is a mark of disgrace that will not be erased for generations. I want to go back to Professor Mamdani, but first play more of the court decision as read out by the chief judge of the International Court of Justice, Joan Donahue.
During the ongoing conflict, senior United Nations officials have repeatedly called attention to the risk of further deterioration of conditions in the Gaza Strip. The court takes note, for instance, of the letter dated 6 December 2023, whereby the Secretary General of the United Nations brought the following information to the attention of the Security Council. I quote, "The healthcare system in Gaza is collapsing. Nowhere is safe in Gaza. Amid constant bombarding by the Israel Defense Forces and without shelter or the essentials to survive, I expect public order to completely break down soon due to the desperate conditions rendering even limited humanitarian assistance impossible. An even worse situation could unfold, including epidemic diseases and increased pressure for mass displacement into neighboring countries. We are facing a severe risk of collapse of the humanitarian system. The situation is fast deteriorating into a catastrophe with potentially irreversible implications for Palestinians as a whole and for peace and security in the region. Such an outcome must be avoided at all costs. End of quote. On 5 January 2024, the Secretary General wrote again to the Security Council, providing an update on the situation in the Gaza Strip and observing that, I quote, sadly, devastating levels of death and destruction continue, end of quote. The court also takes note of the 17 January 2024 statement issued by the UNRWA Commissioner General upon return from his fourth visit to the Gaza Strip since the beginning of the current conflict in Gaza. I quote, every time I visit Gaza, I witness how people have sunk further into despair with the struggle for survival consuming every hour. End of quote. The court considers that the civilian population in the Gaza Strip remains extremely vulnerable. It recalls that the military operation conducted by Israel after 7 October 2023 has resulted inter alia in tens of thousands of deaths and injuries and the destruction of homes, schools, medical facilities, and other vital infrastructure, as well as displacement on a massive scale. The court notes that the operation is ongoing and that the Prime Minister of Israel announced on 18 January 2024 that the war, I quote, will take many more long months, end of quote. At present, many Palestinians in the Gaza Strip have no access to the most basic foodstuffs, potable water, electricity, essential medicines, or heating. The World Health Organization has estimated that 15% of the women giving birth in Gaza Strip are likely to experience complications and indicates that maternal and newborn death rates are expected to increase due to the lack of access to medical care. In these circumstances, the court considers that the catastrophic humanitarian situation in the Gaza Strip is at serious risk of deteriorating further before the court renders its final judgment. The court recalls Israel's statement that it has taken certain steps to address and alleviate the conditions faced by the population in the Gaza Strip. The court further notes that the Attorney General of Israel recently stated that a call for intentional harm to civilians may amount to a criminal offense, including that of incitement, and that several such cases are being examined by Israeli law enforcement authorities. While such steps are to be encouraged, they are insufficient to remove the risk that irreparable prejudice will be caused before the court issues its final decision in the case.
Joan Donahue is the chief judge of the International Court of Justice, the UN's highest court, reading out the decision of the ICJ at The Hague. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion with Mahmoud Mamdani, with Diana Bhutu, and with Roz Siegel. Stay with us. Asmar Alone, My Dear with the Brown Skin, performed by Lina Shamamyan. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As we get response to the International Court of Justice handing down its decision today at The Hague, we want to go right now to the State Department, the questioning of Matt Miller, State Department spokesperson, by the Associated Press reporter Matt Lee. This took place last week about Israel's demolition of Al-Isra University in Gaza.
I mean, it looks like a controlled demolition. It looks like what we do here in this country when we're taking down an old hotel or a stadium. And you have nothing to say?
I have nothing to say about this?
To do that kind of an explosion, you need to be in there. You have to put the explosives down, and it takes a lot of planning and preparation to do. And if there was a threat from this particular facility, they wouldn't have been able to do it.
So I have seen the video. I can tell you that it is something we are raising with the governor of Israel, as we do often do when we when we see to ask questions and find out what the underlying situation is, as we often do when we see reports of this nature. But I'm not able to characterize the actual facts on the ground before hearing that response.
Yeah, but you saw the video.
I did see the video. I don't know what was under that building. I don't know what was inside.
Well, yeah,
inside.
But it doesn't matter what was under the building, because they obviously got in there to put the explosives down to do it in the way that they did.
Again, I'm glad you have factual certainty about it. I just don't. All I have is what I saw in the video.
And I think you guys saw it too.
We did see it, and I can say that we have raised it with the government.
And it's not troubling to you?
We are always troubled by any degradation of civilian infrastructure in Gaza.
That's State Department spokesperson Matt Miller being questioned by the AP reporter Matt Lee. We're continuing our discussion and talking about facts on the ground in Gaza. We'll start with Professor Mahmoud Mamdani, professor of government at Columbia University, the School of International and Public Affairs, SIPA, specializing in the study of colonialism. You are a professor, Mamdani. Professor Mamdani, if you can talk about the response of professors here to the destruction of universities, cultural spaces in Gaza, and the significance of this, and where you think this preliminary ruling of the ICJ, how you think it will affect what's being described today.
Well, I think the more facts come to light, the more Israel's actions in Gaza look like a textbook case of genocide. This calculated destruction of a people's intellectual resources and intellectual legacy is not something which just has a short-term impact or is based on a short-term consideration. It is aimed at a long-term resolution of this question. Already, there is considerable concern amongst faculty at Columbia University. For the last few days, I've been seeing emails going around with photographs of this, what the AP reporter called controlled demolition, premeditated demolition. And people are asking Columbia University to take action, to declare where they stand. And this will go on. One thing I'm struck by as sort of evidence mounts is that the court ruling relied on two sources of information. One was UN commissions, and the second was statements by Israeli leaders themselves. Nothing else. And in doing so, it followed almost strictly the South African application, because the South African application also drew its facts not from other sources, but from UN commissions. And now we have got a situation where the court has asked Israel to report back in a month and tell the court what it has done to comply with its decision, and given South Africa the right to comment on this report back by Israel. This is going to be another round of not just PR, because this is going to be a controlled process. So I think we are on to good territory. We are on to a territory which will bring more and more facts to light. And therefore, we are on to a territory which will permit increased political mobilization based on these facts, especially in the U.S. and Israel, because these are the two countries where there has been minimal information in the mass media on what's been going on in Gaza. Now, this will become open territory.
I want to bring in Diana Buttu again as we begin to wrap the show. Yesterday, Ryan Grimm in The Intercept wrote, "I was at the State Department briefing today and asked if the U.S. would pledge not to veto the International Court of Justice's preliminary ruling on the genocide charges against Israel." If you can respond to what that means, what this process is, and again, what's happening on the ground now in Gaza with Israel dropping more leaflets on what was a safe space, which was Khan Yunis, and this parade of humanity and misery of hundreds, if not thousands, going south from Khan Yunis.
Well, Amy, I'm sure you saw the response, and the response was a typical American administration word salad. And the reason that I think it's so important for us to continue to press ahead is because what Israel has had in mind is two things since the beginning of this attack on Gaza. First, it has made it clear that it wants to make Gaza smaller in size. And they've made it clear that they want to, quote, thin out the population. So it's the combination of genocide and ethnic cleansing and taking more Palestinian land. And that's why from the beginning, it was clear to anybody who was paying attention that Israel was going to begin in the north, but then suddenly magically move to the south as everybody had looked the other way. And this is precisely what's happening. So now what Israel is doing is not only just dropping leaflets in Khan Yunis, there isn't a single place that has been safe in Gaza from day one. And the intention is clear. If you want to get medical treatment, even now or a day after the bombing ends, you're going to have to seek it elsewhere. If you want to get education, you're going to have to go elsewhere. If you want to have a home and have a normal life, you're going to have to go elsewhere. And so it's this combination of genocide and ethnic cleansing that Israel has been pushing forward from day one. And the problem is, of course, that the United States has been not only an enabler for Israel, but it's been blocking any other effort to try to stop this process of genocide and ethnic cleansing.
And the issue of this court decision, we just have 10 seconds, going to the UN Security Council if violated.
Yes. So under the rules of the International Court of Justice, states must oblige, they're obliged to uphold the rules of the ICJ, the decisions. But if they do not, they can go to the UN Security Council. And so I suspect that we will be seeing this at the Security Council. The real question is whether the United States is going to use that veto or abstain.
We want to thank you all for being with us today. Diana Buttu, Palestinian human rights attorney, former advisor to the negotiating team of the Palestine Liberation Organization. In 2004, she was part of the legal team that won a case before the International Court of Justice, which ruled Israel's separation wall in the West Bank is illegal under international law. Speaking to us from Haifa, Israel, Raz Siegel, Israeli historian and professor of Holocaust and Genocide Studies at Stockton University, and Mahmoud Mamdani, professor of government at Columbia University. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
The FCAT After School Podcast is back for its third season.
Starting January 10th, you'll hear interviews and profiles from Simon Fraser University's Faculty of Communication, Art, and Technology alumni with lives lived and stories to tell.
Subscribe to the FCAT After School Podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll be sending a new episode down your feed every other Wednesday starting January 10th.
Or catch us on 90.1 FM CJSF every Tuesday at 4 p.m. starting January 16th.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, SFU's community radio station broadcasting live from Burnaby, BC.